now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where there are some developments that damage this great nation, that damage our unity, that in particular damage any sense of common decency here in the United States of America. One of those incidents, one of those issues, has to do with the riots that have scarred America's universities. Charles Lipson, who is a veteran professor, he's a professor emeritus now at the University of Chicago. And University of Chicago, I don't think, has had its share yet of the pro-Hamas rioting going on. But at Northwestern University, which is not far away, there has been a great deal of violence and turmoil. How is all of this damaging America and the Democratic Party? We'll be talking to Professor Lipson coming right up on the Medved Show. But the damage is obvious because the Democratic Party is associated with the academic world. And one thing that President Biden is doing, and he's doing more of it today, which is going to hurt his own campaign, and it certainly hurts any drive for national unity, is by associating the Democratic Party more and more and more with special privileges and solicitude for the rioters who are scarring America's campuses. Wouldn't it be appropriate that if the kind of loan giveaways that President Biden is talking about, the loan forgiveness that he is talking about, which is going to total, I think the latest claim is another $6 billion, that all of this money should be withheld for people who get themselves arrested or destroy property, break windows or occupy buildings or run crazy in college campuses across the country. Wouldn't that be appropriate? The real question about what is going on is put in a fairly strong way by Joe Scarborough on MSNBC. And he spoke about people who have been comparing some of the riots, some of the building occupations, to what went on during the Vietnam War. There are absolutely crucial differences. One of the things about the Vietnam War protests, and I wrote about this, it was one of my first pieces ever in the Wall Street Journal that I wrote about. This is back in the 70s. And I wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal that got a great deal of attention, suggesting that all of the sort of glorification of the anti-war protesters, of whom I was one, in the 1960s was misleading, because the protests were not based upon idealism and an enlightened view of the world at large, and can't we all bring the world together, and all we are saying is give peace a chance. What basically motivated those demonstrations and that entire movement of activism was people did not want to be drafted into the war. There was a great deal of self-interest involved, and that was particularly true beginning in 1966 when they were drafting people out of college when they didn't keep their grades up. And that was a very real factor. And the idea is that at least you're talking about something that has an impact on America and Americans. But what is this? What are they protesting exactly? What is the damage to Americans, 80% of whom, according to the latest Harvard poll, it's a Harvard Caps Harris survey. It's a very reputable polling organization. But that latest poll shows that 80% of Americans at large, And yes, it is more lopsided for older voters, but this is registered voters. 80% say they favor Israel's side in the war in Gaza rather than the Hamas side. Here is a Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough, comparing the Vietnam protests of more than 50 years ago to the protests of the current pro-Hamas impassioned demonstrators. Listen.
2024, having 18 or 19-year-old people running college campuses as it did in 1968, which is to say, doesn't make any sense at all. And you do wonder where the adults are, the adults that are supposed to be running the university, the amount of money that they are paid to educate students, and they can't allow students to go to class because a small subset of those students and outside agitators want to shut down the camp. Where are the adults? It's staggering. Not just to me. I know I'm a conservative. Not just to me, but to 90% of Americans. They want to know where the adults are at Columbia. They want to know where the adults are at Penn. They want to know where the adults are at Harvard. They want to know where the adults are at all of these college campuses where they're letting their students and outside agitators run across the campus, shut down debate, scream whenever anybody tries to talk reason to them, shout genocidal chants, hold up signs pointing to Jews saying Hamas's next victims, holding up signs talking about the final solution, chanting constantly from the river to the sea. You know what from the river to the sea is? If you don't, that's all right. Most of the students chanting it don't understand that they are chanting genocidal comments.
And why are they chanting genocidal comments? Because there are 8 million Jews who built a country between the river and the sea. And they mean to defend it. And basically, when they say that that is going to be a new free Palestine, it means the extermination of the nation of Israel, for which people have made such enormous sacrifices. One of the things I was talking about and thinking about during this Passover retreat in which I participated, which was 8 very memorable days for my wife and my family. We had 2 of our children and 2 of our grandchildren who were with us on this occasion. But not far from where my father, may his memory be a blessing, is buried, is Mount Herzl. And Mount Herzl is the Israeli Arlington. And they have the ages inscribed on the stones. It's a beautiful location with trees and greenery that you don't expect in that part of the world. And it's very well kept up. And it begins, of course, with the 6,000 Jews who sacrificed their lives. That's more than 1 out of 50 of all the young men who lived in Israel at that time, who gave their lives so that country could come into existence. And you're reading tombstones about people, well, as you do in any military cemetery, any war cemetery. So why is it that the outrage about what's going on campus damages the whole country, but it's going to particularly hurt Democrats? We'll speak to academic veteran Charles Lipson coming up on the MedVet Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the show Professor Charles Lipson, who is a veteran of the academic wars, such as they are. He is the Peter B. Ritzma Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Chicago. And he has a very provocative new piece called Five Ways the Campus Turmoil Hurts Democrats and America. He is also the author of an upcoming new book, Free Speech 101, Why an Open Discussion Matters for a Good Education. What do you say, Professor Lipson, to those who say, okay, you're an advocate of free speech. That's what this turmoil is. There are people who simply are trying to speak out about their support for the terrorist group Hamas. Why is that not the kind of free speech that you support?
It's great to talk to you, Michael. I would say that there are two or three questions that are worth thinking about as listeners try to grapple with themselves. There's no question that peaceful speech is permitted under the First Amendment. That's certainly going to be true at any public university, UW or the University of Illinois or whatever, University of Michigan. It actually is not true in practice. These schools have really shut down that kind of speech. What's not permitted are direct threats to students. And some speech that might be permitted, we ought to do X bad thing to a class of people, Jews, blacks, whatever, that would be permitted under free speech in peaceful times is not permitted when there is an immediate threat. So you can't say we ought to shoot these people if there are people standing around with guns and the other people are inside a house cowering. So there are important limits. The real problem on university campuses is this growth of illiberalism, repression. The idea, and it's almost like the religious wars when Protestants and Catholics fought each other in early modern Europe, and then, of course, more recently in Northern Ireland. These people who are on the left have religious fervor about these ideas, and you aren't just wrong if you disagree with them. You're essentially going to hell.
Well, essentially going to hell and deserving torture and murder and all of the horrors of October 7th. One of the things that Joe Scarborough made as a point, and he said in making the point that he came from a perspective that is conservative. And he asked, where are the adults in all of this? Because generally we have had as a sort of an accepted norm in American society that you don't let teenagers run wild or run major institutions that have billions of dollars in endowments. And what's striking to me is how many people who at least have been interviewed or identified, particularly at Columbia, but I think this has also been true with the recent turmoil at UCLA and elsewhere, they're members of the faculty.
That's true. They are
adults. Isn't that shocking?
It's shocking to me, and I just had an experience with it, literally within the last hour or two. I went down to the, I'm a faculty member at the University of Chicago. I went down to the Quadrangles, which are only a few blocks from my home, and I go down there during the demonstration just to see how things are going and to make sure that students feel safe. And if they're not, to report it to the dean and the president and the provost of the university, all of whom I know, none of whom are doing anything except making statements. You know, the statements are good, but they're actually, I think, afraid to do very much. So I was trying to take some pictures.
What are they afraid of?
I can tell you what they're afraid of. Just one in 1 second. The I was trying to take some pictures in one case because some of the adults there are there as experienced instigators of trouble. They are there to show the students how to do bad things. And they don't want to be photographed because they're not supposed to be on campus at all and because there may be illegal things that are happening and they don't want to be. So I went over. I had been intimidated, and big umbrellas with a point with pointy things on the end of them stuck in my face as I tried to take pictures of some signs which were anti-Semitic and so forth. And I went over to tell just to thank the police as I left for being there to protect the students. And a couple of professors came up and they said were introducing themselves to the police as the new faculty liaisons for the next 2 hours. Okay, so they were the adults that you're talking about. And I said to them, you know, I said, I just tried to take some pictures, and not only did they put the umbrellas up in my face and so forth, but I saw them chasing a Jewish student across the campus backwards with these umbrellas pointed at him as if they were kind of weapons. I don't think they were going to hurt him, but they were clearly intimidating him. I said, do you think that's right? And basically they said, yes, I think that's fine. And one of them had the temerity to say, you know, some people think taking pictures of them steals their soul. And I thought, am I being surrounded by idiots? But in any event, why do people like the president of some of these universities agree and or do nothing? And why do the administrators? Two reasons. A lot of the administrators actually agree with the political positions that the protesters are taking. And they agree with them more than they support free speech. But let's say you're absolutely neutral. You don't care one way or the other. You're not tilting. If you're a president of a university, where do you think your job is more likely to be endangered? If you went in to a relatively peaceful protest, despite what I've just said, the Jewish flags and so forth, which were over separate 30 yards away, just a small group, ripped down three nights in a row, university did nothing, nothing to protect them. If you went in and actually did something, cleared the encampment, which is clearly against the university rule, I think the faculty might vote no confidence in your presidency. You would immediately be in deep trouble.
Okay. This is also, as you suggest in your column, a very, very damaging situation for Democrats. And that's particularly for President Biden, who depends upon the so-called youth vote in order to try to win re-election. What should President Biden be doing that is different from the general silence on this issue that he has taken on? We will get to that and more with Professor Charles Lipson, the author of the new and upcoming book, Free Speech 101. We'll be right back.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, very pleased to welcome back Charles Lipson, the professor emeritus from the University of Chicago, a political scientist who has written an important piece at Real Clear Politics under the heading Five Ways the Campus Turmoil Hurts Democrats and America. And one of the points you make, Charles, is very direct, which is forgiving student loans links Democrats even closer to universities at a time of public disgust with universities. What could Joe Biden be doing to handle this situation with the universities really out of control from coast to coast? What could the President of the United States do differently and more constructively to help his country, his party, and himself?
I think he's like a weather vane. Or to use a different metaphor, I think right now he's caught between the 7-pin ball and the 10-pin ball. There's one on each side. The more he does to assuage the hard left in his party, I think they're wrongly called progressives. What's progressive about supporting some of the causes they support? But they're the hard left led by the Squad in Congress, but by young people who have moved sharply left, according to all the polls that we've seen. If you're under 30, you're much further left than any previous generation. He's caught between that and moving toward the center, which would allow him to grab some of the median voters. And you can just see he's caught. I mean, he couldn't even say, what the protesters are doing wrong in one of his very brief statements made as he was walking. He said, what the protesters are doing is wrong. But, and that's the sort of other side, they need to know more about the Palestinians or something. I mean, it's like Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana said, he needs to go on Amazon and buy a spine.
Well, there is a certain need for that, obviously. But then again, he's worried about those much-discussed 200,000 Arab-American registered voters in the state of Michigan, which I guess he needs to carry. But what's also interesting to me is nobody has really drawn any kind of comparison between the handling of the January 6th riots and the handling of these riots on colleges and universities. And then you throw in the BLM riots that devastated the country and actually caused a great deal of property destruction after the killing of George Floyd. Do we need a general better consensus agreement about handling civil disorder and violence and property destruction and a riotous citizenry, and regardless of the ideological orientation of the rioters?
Well, we certainly do. You're absolutely right, and I think you nailed it right on the head. There's some things that are just wrong, regardless of the substantive content of what you paint on a wall or why you're blocking the Golden Gate Bridge. It would be wrong to do it for one side, and it's wrong to do it for the other. And I would say, I would add to that, that when you have these Soros DAs, which you have all over the country, what happens is that when people do that, especially when they're on the left or they are a minority, and nothing happens to them, the people actually who were at Columbia and who were arrested for doing illegal things the other day, not last night, but the other day, they were immediately released. They weren't charged. Trump is on trial for weeks for a bookkeeping error. They haven't even alleged, they've only connected it indirectly to a felony. But, I mean, these are people who are engaged in violent felonies, and you have DAs that are just letting them off. That's wrong in and of itself, but it also sends a signal to people who would violate our laws and property rights and all the rest in the future that they can get away with it. That is a problem. It's like endemic inflation. Once you let it get going, it's really hard to get back under control. And I got to tell you, I'm actually concerned. We haven't seen much in the way of these crazy right-wing groups coming to campus to take on some of the left-wing groups that are on campus. But I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
You don't think that's a good idea, do you? That if Turning Point USA or the Proud Boys marching to Columbia to try
no,
to...
No, it's a terrible idea. I mean, if you march peacefully down the street, even if I find your views noxious, that's fine. But I mean, these are people who are looking for a fight, and normally people who are looking for a fight get one.
Yes, they do, which is exactly what the story is about the war in Gaza. And
well, let me make one final point, Michael.
By all means.
I think the biggest political implication of all of this disorder, which is compounded by the massive influx of drugs and the open southern border, is that the party in power, which means the party that holds the White House, is largely held responsible for the disorder. So I think it really hurts the president.
And again, President Trump has been also fairly understated, uncharacteristically understated on this issue, and it may be because there continues to be so much discussion about him pardoning all of the rioters from January 6th. That would send exactly the wrong signal, wouldn't it? Because what that suggests is that if you riot and you destroy property and you assault public law enforcement officers, that you get off if you have a point of view that's in power.
Well, I think some of the people who are in jail or and so forth seem to have done very little. But some people did something that is fundamentally wrong in our country, which is they tried to obstruct the casting of electoral votes to seat the next president. And so I would draw a distinction among the people who did different things there. But we've got a deeply divided country. And you talked earlier about the need for adults in the room. But adults don't just mean people who are over 18 or 21. It means a maturity of judgment. And I think that's what you bring to a discussion of public issues. And Lord have mercy, I wish there was more like it.
Well, good. When you talk about Lord have mercy, the idea that one of the hit movies recently is this film Civil War. Have you seen it?
No. you would be shocked at how few films I see.
Well, that generally it means you've been leading a charmed life. This is a very, very disturbing film, because what it shows is the ultimate result of basically people taking ideological struggles to a violent level in their own hands, which is not a good idea. Charles Lipson has a forthcoming book. It is called Free Speech 101. Watch for it, and we will watch for him. His piece, Five Ways the Campus Turmoil Hurts Democrats in America, posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. We will be right back.
There really are no evil people.
You don't think there are evil people in the Bible?
Jesus said that everyone is basically good.
What's your biblical source for everyone's basically good?
This is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, the leaders of the Republican Party, and I mean the leaders who aren't spending most of their time in courtrooms. Again, there was a piece today about how much President Trump dislikes the situation of going into court every day and having to listen to people talk about, well, things that are obviously unpleasant for his family. He enjoyed having Eric Trump at court with him, giving him a little bit of moral support. But Speaker Mike Johnson, who more and more has come across as a major leader for the Republican Party. And again, we are so quick to criticize when people on one side or another are misleading their troops. Mike Johnson has really straightened up and flown right and gotten a great deal done. And he gave a press conference on Capitol Hill. And he spoke, even though he comes from a district in Louisiana, which does not have a heavy Jewish population. There are very few districts in the United States that have heavy Jewish populations. So this is not someone who is trying to exploit the fears that people feel right now, and they feel those fears intensely, having just been together with 800, more than 800 of my fellow Jews who try to take our religious faith seriously. I can tell you people are genuinely afraid for their children, for going to services this coming Saturday and Friday. In any event, Mike Johnson's press conference spoke about anti-Semitism as a virus and sounded like this, clip 8.
Anti-Semitism is a virus, and because the administration and woke university presidents aren't stepping in, we're seeing it spread. We have to act, and House Republicans will speak to this fateful moment with moral clarity. We really wish those in the White House would do the same. We will not allow anti-Semitism to thrive on campus, and we will hold these universities accountable for their failure to protect Jewish students on campus. And that's why today we're here to announce a house-wide effort to crack down on anti-Semitism on college campuses. Nearly every committee here has a role to play in these efforts to stop the madness that has ensued.
Okay, look, that is a strong statement. Now, why can't Joe Biden make a statement like that? Because there is such a thing as an Arab American vote. The Arab American population, a voting population, is even smaller than the Jewish voting population in the United States. It's very different in Canada, by the way, where they have a much bigger Muslim population and Arab population than we do in the United States. But the idea that President Biden is prevented from showing some leadership on this issue because of concerns about Ilhan Omar and what she is going to say. Ilhan Omar saying that, suggesting that some Jewish students, and she was specific about this, that some Jewish students are pro-genocide. The whole throwing around of the term genocide. It is crazy. And Senator Tom Cotton, who, let us remember, is a graduate of Harvard Law School, a decorated veteran of the conflict in Afghanistan, and a currently retired Army officer, he was at the GOP press conference today. And he called the Palestinian protesters at colleges lunatics, appropriately. Clip 3.
We're here to discuss the little Gazas that have risen up on campuses across America and the liberal college administrators and politicians who refuse to restore law and order and to protect other students. These little Gazas are disgusting cesspools of anti-Semitic hate, full of pro-Hamas sympathizers, fanatics, and freaks. Here's just a sampling of what these lunatics were saying just days after Hamas's atrocity against Israel. A Cornell professor called the October 7th attack exhilarating. A Columbia professor called it awesome. A Yale professor called it an extraordinary day. More than 30 Harvard students signed a letter claiming that Israel was, quote, entirely responsible for the attack. A pro-Hamas student group at University of Virginia called Hamas terrorists Palestinian resistance fighters. And remember, this was all before Israel had seriously retaliated. The terrorist sympathizers in these little Gazas aren't peacefully protesting Israel's conduct of the war. They're violently and illegally demanding death for Israel, just like their ideological twins, the Ayatollahs in Iran.
Okay, this is, of course, spot on. They are all genuine quotes that he is citing. And President Trump, who generally President Trump has not spoken out a great deal on this. He has said several times that that basically anyone who votes against him is someone who hates Israel and someone who hates the Jewish religion, which is not a good position to take. But he began framing a more constructive position, at least a little bit, in a call-in that he did with the Sean Hannity show. This is the former president of the United States, clip 18.
Well, it's just such a sad thing to see, Sean. When you look at this, it's not even believable. If you go back a year, or go back 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, this would not even be possible to think about. Nobody would be thinking this could happen. You look at the anti-Semitism, the hatred of Israel by so many people. You go back 10 years, I mean, Israel was protected by Congress, and now Congress is just doing numbers that are unbelievable with, I think, a very, very small group of people within Congress, and it's got to stop. But we have to go back to the roots. We have to protect. We have to stop the anti-Semitism that's just pervading our country right now, and Biden has to do something. Biden is supposed to be the voice of our country, and it's certainly not much of a voice. It's a voice that nobody's heard. And look, I don't think he's able to do it. I don't think he's got what it takes to do it, but he's got to. He's got to strengthen up, and he's got to be heard.
And then he finished with some praise for the NYPD, which was pretty tough and effective against some of the crazies at Columbia. This is clip 17.
Well, I really think you have a lot of paid agitators, professional agitators in here, too. And I see it all over. And, you know, when you see signs and they're all identical, that means they're being paid by a source. You know, these aren't hand-painted signs where people would go to their basement and paint something because they really believed it. These are all signs that are identical. They're made by the same printer. And, you know, when you see that, that means there's somebody atop that's paying or a group that's paying. And they're doing great disservice to the world, but they're doing great disservice to our country. But when you look at New York in a state like this, but look at other cities, it's not a lot different. It's frankly worse in some places than it is right now in New York. And I think the New York's finest, New York City's finest, have been incredible. The way they've been, it's not over yet, but the way they walked in and the way they climbed through that window, they were not afraid of anything. And it looks like they've got it maybe clamped down. But it should never have gotten to this. And they should have done it a lot sooner than before they took over the building, because it would have been a lot easier if they were in tents rather than a building. And tremendous damage done, too. You know, when you look at that building, that's a landmark. And it's really been damaged badly by these people.
He's talking perhaps about Hamilton Hall. And this was a point that rock star Greg Tomlin made with our show. And that it's ironic that it's named Hamilton Hall. It's named after Alexander Hamilton, who is probably the most celebrated, famous alumnus of Columbia University when it was still called King's College before the name was changed after the Revolution. And there was an episode in the early history of King's College when Alexander Hamilton actually rose to denounce a number of riotous revolutionary students who wanted to tear things down and occupy buildings. And he was very passionate and effective in talking about why that was the wrong way to go to get the change that they all wanted. Remembering Alexander Hamilton and remembering respect for Hamilton Hall at Columbia, all of this is a healthy direction and a needed direction for this greatest nation on God's green earth.